Yeah, I think everybody wished it when, you know, when we signed him in the summer. I think probably everybody, David, wished that it was going to play out differently than it had. I think when we met last time here, when I met with you all last time, you know, it's just so interesting how it all goes. You know, he had a lot of chances early in the year. They don't go in. You know, the impact of that on confidence and chemistry is massive. And then Michael Bunting steps up and Kerr finds good chemistry with John. And it just doesn't really, you know, play out well for Nick, right? And, you know, that's the way she goes. Sometimes she goes, sometimes she doesn't.
And that's the way she goes. Kyle Dubas, that's your big win of the day. Quoting the greatest Canadian television show of all time. That's right, it's the greatest Canadian television show of all time, all right? I know Schitt's Creek was good. I know some of the olds love Kids in the Hall, but that's the greatest Canadian show of all time. Trailer Park Boys, there's just no question about it. It's the Fan Morning Show. I'm JD Bunkus, Ailish Forfar. No Blake Murphy today. He's taking a couple of days off. How are you this morning?
I'm good. You know, when I was listening to Dubas there, his voice really sounds like Bourne, doesn't it?
All those guys.
Did you notice that?
I didn't.
They kind of sound the same.
Maybe they all.
Next time we have a Dubas clip, just close your eyes, and it sounds like it could be Bourne.
Okay. Maybe it's because they work together. They got a little hockey guy tone. Oh, hey, we're young guys in hockey tone.
That's exactly it.
Hey, we're guys who are just trying to figure this out in hockey, you know? Justin Bourne, by the way, 9 o'clock today. We'll run the clip. We'll do a comparison when he's on.
Okay.
We'll do a side-by-side.
I'll ask him. Yeah, we'll do a side-by-side.
So, the Leafs make a trade. The Leafs lose a game, but who cares, right? Because Nick Ritchie, the whipping boy, the number one whipping boy in town, gone. Gone from the Toronto Maple Leafs, dealt shortly after. Elliot Friedman left the cookie crumbs. He's coming on today at 8 o'clock to talk about it. He leads the cookie crumbs. He tells us during the game that, hey, the Arizona Coyotes, who nobody on earth was paying attention to other than Elliot Friedman, tell that they scratch Lyubushkin, who we are going to find out about, but a lot of people had some pretty strong opinions about, and I'll fill you in on a couple of texts I got. That the Leafs might have something to do with this, that they've been eyeing this for a while, and it could be a Nick Ritchie landing spot. Another thing that he had alluded to earlier in the week turns out to be true. So the deal comes in as that. The Toronto Maple Leafs send out Nick Ritchie and a conditional 2025 second-round pick that I believe is a 2023 third-rounder. I should have written that down.
They get a choice, either the third pick in 2023 or the second-round pick in 2025.
Yeah, for our Ilya Lyubushkin, who is a right-shot depth defenseman who's making less than $1 million this year, coming from the Arizona Coyote. And Ryan Zingle, who was immediately waived. So essentially, this is just a salary dump trade. You need to get out from Nick Ritchie, and you get Lyubushkin, who might end up helping you. We'll see. I'm kind of optimistic about it. We'll see. I don't know about you, but I could not believe how Leafs fans were just over the moon about this trade. Like,
Dubas redeems himself. A magician.
Yeah, I saw those same takes, and I felt like I was taking crazy pills. Like, Kyle Dubas, two things can be true. We can live in areas of gray. Kyle Dubas had a really good offseason. There's just no question about it. He signed David Kampf, who basically has taken shots as his old team, saying we didn't have the puck enough, and that's why I stunk. That's why I had bad numbers last year. He signed Michael Bunting to legitimately what might be one of the best five contracts in hockey right now, a guy who is not on a one-year deal, who's on a two-year deal making less than $1 million and scoring even strength goals like a machine. He's part of the best line in hockey. Even if you look at some of the other deals that I don't like that Dubas signed, like the Peter Mrazek three-year contract, that's not a horrible deal. The Leafs would probably return something on that contract. Same with Travis Dermott, who, again, not a very good deal, but you likely had to do it. The Jared McCann thing, whatever. It's not. I would say that on balance, Dubas has had one of the better off seasons amongst general managers in the NHL. But he signed Nick Ritchie to that contract. he's who did it. I didn't get how people were calling him a magician for moving off of a contract that he signed that was so poor they used a second round pick to move off of it. And yeah, the second is far away, so I do like that piece of business, right? 2025, mm-hmm. God, you have so much time to recuperate that asset. But I didn't look at this as a massive win. You ended up getting a depth defenseman, and I hate to break this to people, but those don't cost a second-round pick to go get the sixth defenseman from the worst team in hockey history. Like, it's just not the case.
I think a lot of people are just eager to have the Nick Ritchie story over, and that's why they could jump to this W, huge, massive win. But if you break it down, as you said, it's more of like a B. It's an average B, I think.
And
but the biggest thing, they solved the problem of having, you know, a player for $2.5 million that wasn't playing, that was hurting the cap situation, that was clearly not a fit. That's a good feeling to get rid of that. I think other than that, they're getting a defenseman who has a little bit of upside, as we said. He's right shot D, bigger guy. Apparently he has would have the most hits out of anybody, compared to, like, if he was on the Leafs roster, he would have the most hits. So that's a nice thing. He's 6'2", 200 pounds. Other than that, you know, he's a UFA this summer. So we'll see what happens. But small cap hit, he, you know, can kill penalties. He's a big guy. It seems like that's an average look at which we could have got for Nick Ritchie. But he still did do the Nick Ritchie trade. He still did make those decisions. But I think if you look at his offseason, it was kind of the biggest glaring issue. You know, they hit on Bunting, Kasha, Kampf, and then it was Ritchie. It was Ritchie. So I think there's a little bit of Leafs Nation taking and a big exhale on that, maybe glamorizing the situation just a bit because of the excitement that they have that he's no longer a Leaf. But yeah, I wouldn't be giving it an A+. I'll tell you that.
I just saw some of the, you're right, the magician stuff was definitely, I went, oh, pardon me, I don't understand what's happening here. I think that this was an achievable move. If you had a Nick Ritchie on your roster, that this was a deal pretty much any GM could make. This would have been out here for a while. This wasn't Kyle Dubas fleecing anyone. That being said, I kind of think that Ilya Lyubushkin is going to be a fan favorite here. I really believe that he is going to come in, and I'm setting myself up for failure on this, but I think that he is exactly what a certain section of the fan base is dying for, and that we are headed for an all-time eye test intangibles versus analytics discussion between him and Timothy Liljegren. I think that we are going down the track of certain people of a certain age and who played hockey and blah, blah, blah are going to be all in on Lyubushkin, and people who love the charts and the internet are going to absolutely throw all of their weight behind Timothy Liljegren. It is going to be a heavyweight Toronto
battle for the ages.
Oh my God. The first thing I thought of was this. I the only spin I could have is some people will turn it into Liljegren versus Hall, but this guy's going to be occupying Liljegren's spot, right? He's going to be further down the line. So I'm an honest person. I don't know much about this guy, right?
I cannot say that I had watched much of his career before this.
Correct. I messaged a bunch of people who had. I messaged around. I asked a few people, hey, can I get a little bit of a report on the guy? Can I get a little bit of just what Toronto is getting back here? Can I get just some idea of what this guy might do on a better team? Because that's the thing, too, is some people were throwing around charts with this guy saying he's very good at shot suppression, not a lot of offense. But I also go, well, that's also, again, on an Arizona Coyotes team that who are
you playing with?
How
much can you trust
with?
That that's replicable? Whoa.
Replicable, right.
And any other team. It's very different.
So I got back. I asked for comparables. The following comparables I got back from multiple different people. You ready?
Okay. I'm ready.
Luke Shen.
Oh, okay.
Radko Gudas. Roman Polak. I got Luke Shen three different times.
Okay.
So,
and Luke Shen was someone we talked about a little bit earlier about being somebody, hey, the Leafs should maybe think about this player. So maybe a cheaper version of him.
If he's any of those guys, big dub for Kyle Dubas. Big dub for Kyle.
Who were the other two that you said? Gudas and...
Radko Gudas and Roman Polak. So those are all guys who have bite to their game.
Yes, that's the first thing I thought of. Gritty, but not like disruptive.
Gudas probably the closest one to that, but out of those guys, I don't think of just monsters. I think of guys who can be physical and who are physical, but are not just complete savages, right? But either way, basically this guy is projected by everybody as a legitimate 5'6". And he's big, he's heavy, he plays with edge sometimes, but not all the times. And that he gets himself into trouble when he tries to do too much with the puck. That's essentially the scouting report. That's me taking everything together and pushing them all in. That was basically it. Gets in a little over his head sometimes, doesn't always have the physical edge, needs to have it to really be at his best with his game. That excites me. I feel like we're going to see this guy. He's not playing with the Leafs until Tuesday night, but when he steps into that Leafs roster, and as soon as he buries somebody in front of the net, if I was him, if I was his agent, because
get
the smartest thing for him...
Hit someone.
Oh, my God. The smartest thing for him, Ailish, as an unrestricted free agent, is to sign another one-year contract with Toronto and hope that they will re-sign you so that you can get the hype train off the rails. But if he can come in against a crappy Columbus team and take a penalty for just being a monster, just mug somebody in front of Jack Campbell or Mrazek, whoever's in net that night, or just lay a big open ice hit, Leaf fans are going to love him. Leaf fans are going to freak out about him.
People wanted Nick Ritchie to be more physical. So if you can come in and do two times as much as Nick Ritchie did, which was zero, I think that's a win. Two times. But, you know, when I did some analysis with the Twitter folks as well, some of the things that popped out for me was this stat that I was wondering, and you just mentioned, like, how much is it accurate coming from Arizona to here? He was only minus six on a team that had a minus 74 goal differential. And
that's,
he starts most
bad,
of his...
minus 74.
Yeah, yes, that's real bad. And he starts most of his shifts in the D zone. So, like, thinking that he could be a solid pairing maybe for someone like Muzzin who's struggling, is he the guy that can fill in there and give him a boost? That's what I'm interested about, seeing, like, who he'll start with, who he'll play with. Seems to be a top two pairing, though. Seems like Muzzin was one of the people floated around to be someone that might need this type of boost. I mean, I don't think that he's been super great as of late, so that could be a good pairing, but... yeah, kills penalties, throws hits, plays more than 18 minutes. That's huge. But also, he's coming from Arizona. Like, who else is playing? So, interesting to see how that floats in.
Do you know what I really like about this move, though? And if I'm really giving Kyle Dubas a W? And, again, I think that it can be gray areas where I look at this and say the same thing as you. I know some people are going to say that I'm just being a hater, blah, 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 moving off the Ritchie contract. I couldn't get over how people kept being like, yeah, but they got out from the Ritchie contract. I was like, right, which he signed. Which you could have gotten out from underneath completely had you just not signed it at all. I love that Kyle Dubas once again moved out way ahead of the market. That he jumped in and he found a way to not only just move the Nick Ritchie money, that you get a month now where you get a look at this guy. Well, it's not quite a month, but you know what I'm saying. A few weeks where you get to look at this guy and see if he fits in somewhere on his roster. Maybe he does get a little bit of time with Jake Muzzin. Hell, they gave Timothy Liljegren time with Muzzin, and I don't think that that was a very wise experiment at all. So why not this guy? And if you want to continue to see if Justin Hall and Sandin, or Sandin can elevate Hall, or the two of them end up working out, then good. Give that a bit of a run. If you want to give Hall a night off, and you want to run the young guys together and Hall, who knows? You just have other iterations right now that you can try out, that you can test out. I will say, so it makes sense money-wise that they waived Zingle. I was a little surprised that they did that immediately, just considering the other story out of the weekend, which is Nylander scores, finally. He snaps an 8-game goalless drought. Tavares now is on an 8-game goalless drought. The two of those guys, do you know what's insane? I pulled this stat. Do you know what they were the only line that didn't break even in shot attempts in that game? Like, their shot share, despite having those two goals, the Nylander's two goals, their shot share was still below 50% in that game. Only one on the team. Which
and it's been a very much easy to point the finger at who on that line, especially after that game, has kind of been the issue, I think. But Nylander gets back into the scoring column, and it makes it even more evident.
Well, who is it to you?
I think it's Tavares.
Yeah, which is not great. Which is really not great. I think it's kind of a little bit of both of those guys and the fact that they're playing with Kerfoot, who, that Kyle Dubas clip, he goes, well, Nick Ritchie couldn't play for us because Alex Kerfoot's doing so much. And I went, yeah, that was true for a little while. That was true for about a month. And then it was what's the opposite of true? Not true. That's no longer true. They have been outscored 7-3 at even strength this month. 7-3. Even with those couple of goals that they just popped. So it's a problem. It's officially a problem. And a couple of things. One is that I think that people are very reluctant to criticize Nylander after his playoff performance. And we're just exhausted by the whole discussion about the guy. So most people look at that as dynamite. They go, powder keg. I don't want to be a part of discussing Nylander's play because I don't want to get into it with you people. And to me, I think we all know what Nylander is at this point.
And everyone that does complain about it ends up being that type of person on Twitter, like your uncle. Your uncle is complaining about Nylander, right? It's just like you've been put into the uncle box category.
It's not worth discussing. It's not worth debating. He also should, I believe anyways, get a little bit of reprieve given that he was the guy who showed up in the playoff series. Right?
And if at the beginning of this year, he was one of the only players that started the season hot.
When they get to the playoffs, I believe that he's going to turn it on and he's going to be good. He's one of the guys I'm the least worried about on the team. So during the regular season stuff, I'm just not overly concerned with a guy who's going to put up career numbers overall and who just did it in the postseason and who also, I think we already know, is someone who kind of fluctuates during the regular season, which a lot of players do, but he does it to a very, very high degree. I just don't want to have the argument with people. I think Alex Kerfoot is something that's a known commodity at this point. He's fine. He's a decent depth winger who had a little bit of chemistry last year with Nylander, but overall leaves you wanting in a lot of different ways for his salary. Tavares, this is an issue now, man. You make too much money and you're the captain on the team. You can't be getting outscored over the course of a month when your team is dominating. And that's the other part. We focus on him sometimes where we say, hey, are we too hard on Tavares because he's not Matthews? Right? We talked about this last week. Are we too hard on him because he's not Matthews? Yes. But also, we don't talk about him because Austin Matthews, Mitch Marner, and Michael Bunting are the best line in hockey, and they're completely papering over this line. They're covering for them. They're a good friend. But now Tavares and Nylander have been showing up for a month in a row without their homework, and their friends have been doing theirs for them for a month straight, and now they're looking at them saying, you guys gotta do one of your papers, okay? Like, just do a paper every once in a while, please. That's all we need. So, yeah, I'm a little concerned that they've played this much together this year and that they're barely cracking the shot share percentage at 51. Like, that's an issue now. This is now officially enough of a sample that I don't think it's getting better. And now you're kind of hoping with this Lyubushkin move that he does solve a problem so that if you do need to go and get a forward, you can add it. Because I don't know. Like, let me ask you this. Do you think that there's an internal solution here? Because I don't see how the puzzle pieces fit where you make that line better. Like, who cares if you replace Kerfoot? I don't think that there's necessarily a better option to move.
So last week we bounced around the idea when we had the similar conversation of mixing up that top line and having to put Marner back with Tavares because that seems to be the only time that he has some life and has some jump. And I was maybe the only person that was a bit okay about that idea because they needed a spark. They didn't end up doing that. And I still think that seems to be like really the only internal solution, which not anyone's that big of a fan. You know, you're not going to stick with that forever. You're going to keep that top line the way it is. So when I saw the trade on the weekend, it did give me a little bit of a thought. Is this far ahead of a play a smart move? Yes, to see if you need to add another top four player instead of adding another top six or top four D or another top six forward, right? Is this giving the Leafs enough buffer time to say, did we fix something for the foreseeable future? How do we get that second line going? I think that that's an interesting conversation that they'll probably have to really focus in on here over the next 2 weeks is like, if you can't get Tavares going, what are you going to do? I don't think that you want to move Marner down there for longer than a game or two to spark him. You know, that line is doing so well. I don't think that Mikheyev is the solution. You know, I really do think it seems to be somebody else, but everybody else has kind of had their opportunity. And I don't know if there's no one we've overlooked. Like, who's going to slide up there? Spezza? Don't. No. So it might need to be somebody else.
I'm curious is I wouldn't mind seeing Engvall up there. I really wouldn't. I've not been the hugest.
I mean, he's probably the next one in line at this point.
Well, the way that I look at it, I just want to see somebody different. But I like the first line and the third line. I just don't want to tinker with those anymore. I think the third line is perfect. And when you're starting to move pieces off of it, fine. I guess you could end up bumping up Mikheyev and bumping down Kerfoot and seeing how that looks. Fine. I guess that would be the one thing. But I'm not overly crazy about having your perfect third line reshaped in any way. I like it.
You shouldn't have to do that for your captain, your veteran, the guy. I know we don't need to talk about the money, but the guy making $11 million,
yeah, like, it's too much.
That stuff starts to weigh on you when you're trying to accept a lower contributing member of your team. It's not that Kasha or that, you know, Kampf are underperforming. This is your marquee player. He's the guy. He came here and he wanted to make a big change and he wanted to be this big, I don't know, boost to Toronto. And it does not look to me that it's aging very well. And I think that's when people start to get, oh, did we make a huge mistake? Let's just not talk about it, right? Like, let's just, you know, talk about other people. But he's the glaring thing right now that really needs to be addressed.
It's a problem. No, but he's a problem if he's not going to score and he's not going to at least dominate 5-on-5. Last year, this is the difference. I'm trying not to panic on this because do you remember last year they went through this where he and Nylander weren't having chemistry and we went, what's going on? Why aren't these guys producing more? And then Keefe said, well, these guys are just doing something completely different this season when it comes to defensive metrics. These guys are – Tavares is leading the charge of the team defense revolution in the North
Division. And that's less glamorous as your fan. You're like, I don't care about defensive metrics. Sure. I want him to score 30 goals.
Yes, but ultimately he ended up with his numbers, right? This is one where he's not tracking to have the same John Tavares numbers. This is one where, again, I think that in a big sample, analytics – like, I don't even like using these ones as analytics. This is just an obvious one. Hey, does you generate more shots when you're on the ice than your opponent? Shot share to me is important for lines that are together for a long time.
Simple to understand, too.
The most simple to understand, especially for centers who play 20 minutes a night like John Tavares. It's the ultimate, hey, this is actually meaningful. It's way more meaningful than, say, fourth lines that get staggered or third pairings that get thrown with good offensive units in offensive zones. And I know, nerds, don't tell me about all the ways to quantify these things. I don't trust them. I don't trust any of the things that you have. But shot share is obvious. And for John Tavares to be at 51% with Nylander this year at 300 minutes is enough for me to go, something's not working. And if I need to throw another thing on your guy's line in order to make it work, well, that's another problem in its own right. Because the whole proposition of this team is that you're going to have two lines, you have two first lines. And I'll tell you this, 51% shot share is not a first line. That's not a first line. That's not a second line. That's
what is
okay.
Do you have it in front of you? Not to put you on the spot there, Blake.
I'm
but
not Blake.
Do you have the shot share for a top line example? Like,
no,
just,
I do not.
No. Well, we'll get that during
Don't
the
ever do that to me again, Ailish. You know who I am. Like, I come prepared
well, maybe
with the stats
it was just
that
like
I have to fit
in front
my
of you
narratives.
In a chart. No,
no Ailish, I come prepared with my narrative. Better. And I'm not Blake who's going around and flying through spreadsheets. Do you know how long it takes me to get those?
You know
numbers,
what?
Ailish?
Maybe by the 9:30 block we'll have it.
No, don't say that. There's zero. Just text him. Yeah, he's on vacation. He has a couple
of
sleeping
days. Just
wondering
if you could give us the top line shot share. Thank you.
Yeah, but by the way, just give us the odd average of a top shot, a top line. No, but 50% is essentially that. You're not 50%. You got to be better than 50%, and that's what they've been all year long. They got to be better. They have to find a way to improve that. And I got to tell you that the Tavares contract. That's going to start to become a point of conversation if he stays this way, because it already was. And yes, he's always, to me, been a guy that has been unfairly criticized and over-criticized and blah, 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 blah. But if this trend continues, you better believe that fans are going to be circling that at three more years at that $11 million cap it. Like, that's going to become a massive, massive story in Leafland. Last thing before we go. Jack Campbell, another game where he lets in a bunch of goals. He had 3 goals at one point on 15 shots. I thought the first 2 were not that great. The next 2, no big deal. He got kind of... What are you supposed to do? Like, that one goal, he makes the huge pad save, and then it gets shoveled in that. Like, yeah, it's just just a tough night for him. But it's another game where he lets in 4 more. And right after we do the is Jack back, and we're kind of feeling it, I thought...
It's a nice little roller coaster we're on.
Well... It's still, it just, it reminded me that it's still going to be a story and that how much we root for certain players, right? Where if Jack Campbell has 2 good games, we go, he's back, everybody, he's back because we like him. We're rooting for him. And then he has not such a good game and we go, okay, let's be patient with it. It's just, oh, wait. Even though the larger sample is, again, not great.
I think he obviously had a really strong game against the Kraken, but then when you look at Pittsburgh, it did seem like a little bit of a letdown, but the competition between those two is also substantially different. You know, the Penguins, if he wasn't playing as well as he did, that could have been, you know, a bigger score. But I don't know. I just think that you're right. It's going to be a conversation. We don't know what he has in terms of a full season of outlook, right? We only know him in these little bursts and what he could do last season and at the beginning of the season. So as confident as I was coming off that last game where I was like, I told you, Jack's back. Jack's amazing. I still don't know what Jack being good is, like consistently good. I think there's so many peaks and valleys because I don't even really know if he knows what his like full, consistent, I'm your number one starter type of output is. So a couple games, they have a lot of games coming up. Like they got tonight, they got Tuesday, they have Thursday, and then they have Saturday. So that's a lot of games over. This is that span that we talked about of like crazy amount of Leafs games, a lot having to do with like the rescheduling. So maybe, you know, in 1 week, we've seen enough sample to be like, all right, now Jack is back or he's regressed or what. But I feel like that conversation is going to be something that we're going to cycle up every time that he has a game that isn't stellar.
You know what it is, though? It's just like he needs to be able to put together a little stretch where he goes
like
on a
3
run
games
where,
to me, I think, is a really good sample.
Yeah, just give me a couple of games. Like, we got the 2. We got the Kraken game, and we got the Pittsburgh game, where the save percentage is high. But this game against St. Louis, it's another one where it's 848. It's an 848 save night. The Calgary game was 800. The New Jersey game, 667. The Anaheim game, 850.
667?
Yeah, well, I mean, remember, he got pulled in that game.
Oh, yeah.
He gave up 3 goals on, I want to say, 10 shots or 9 shots, whatever that equates to. 9 shots, I guess.
Good math.
850 against Anaheim, 800 against New York, 800 against St. Louis. Like, all of a sudden you remember that, oh, right, those were the only 2 games where he was over 900 since essentially Mitch Marner came back, the Vegas game on January 11th. That's a long time. So I definitely looked at it and just said, I'm going to need to see actually a little bit of runway here before I start doing another podcast about is Jack back. He can have some good games. He can have some confident games. But yes, good with the top-end goaltenders, it's about more consistency than that. And he's got to be better than what he was against St. Louis. Like, he didn't cost them that game, but I would say that they got completely out goaltendered, and that hurt them. That's why they lost it. They had more offensive possession. They were the better team. I thought that they carried the play more. Jack let in some bad goals. And if you're comparing the teams that they've played on the stretch to what's going to happen in the postseason, hey, the Calgary game, the St. Louis game, those are games that resemble the playoffs to me. Those are games that resembled really tough opponents. Mm-hmm. So did Pittsburgh. He gets credit for Pittsburgh. I'm just saying that's a couple of games where the team is in tight ones where they lose because of goaltending that's just not up to snuff.
And there's something to be said about going down early 2-0 against a team like that.
Oh,
that's
definitely
even more difficult. You put your team in a tough spot. Even if he plays the rest of the game stellar, you know, he has a strong second and third, that's a really tough way to start the game. And then everyone has to change their playing style for the rest of the game. You're trying to get back. You maybe have to be riskier to try to get the puck out, but maybe you're not paying as much attention to detail in your D zone because you're down 2 goals already. So I think that also didn't bode well, just like with the way that the game started. Never want to be down 2 goals early. I think that also just didn't give him maybe the personal confidence that you need. So I want to see 3 games strung together. It's going to be my number, all right?
The Eilish test?
Yeah, the Eilish test. Not the eye test, the Eilish test. 3 games.
Well, that would be like the Eilish. Some people call you that, the Eilish test.
Yeah, lots of people do.
Mess up the name a little bit, tiny bit for it. So, by the way, I can't wait for me to completely fall in love with Lyubushkin, because he's obviously, like, all those defensemen that I listed, I'm a big fan of all those guys.
Yeah.
And this is, well, this is the thing that that's going to be so perfect, is I love a depth defenseman who plays with grit and sandpaper and who will lay the lumber in somebody's back and who will hit somebody in open ice. And
so who
you hate to go
in the Leafs had someone like that?
Probably Roman Polak. Really? Like, well, I mean, Zach Bogosian last year, actually.
Yeah,
Zach
for like 1 minute.
Yeah, they had Zach Bogosian for a season, and a weird season, and it sucked that he left. Mm-hmm. But then before him, I think it was probably Roman Polak. And I cannot wait to love this guy and tweet about this guy and celebrate this guy, only to have people, all they've heard is, you didn't even like the trade because you wouldn't call him a magician. You wouldn't call him the king with us. Anyway, good job by Dubas. He gets out from that contract. And I think, yeah, if this guy can contribute, if this guy fills in and you end up with someone who is actually on your roster at the end of the year, this is a win. This is a good win. Let's see how it plays out. Let's take a break. You told me you got a lot of things for the A-list today.
I do have a weird collection of items, yes.
Okay.
A little grab bag.
So a weird collection of items next on the Fan Morning Show. JD and A-list today. Blake back later in the week. Subscribe to the podcast. Leave a review. 5 stars. Do all those different things. The A-list on the other side of the break.
The most opinionated Maple Leaf show out there. Real Kipper and Bourne. Be sure to subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
It's the Fan Morning Show. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. A special welcome back to Vic. The guy behind the tunes, behind the sound effects. They'll be back this week. For all our loyal listeners that were missing the yum yum yums and the little clips, the little Ailish's Simps clips, they'll be back. Vic, back from his vacation. We missed you, buddy.
Bing bong!
Oh, see? I hadn't had a bing bong in a week. And guess what? JD's on mute. Oh, times are just, they never change.
No, everything's the same. Time is a flat circle. Vic took an entire week off. Post Valentine's Day after posting his new bow.
Yeah.
Did you not put that together?
He drops an Instagram story of him and his lady.
His lover.
I instantly click the lover. Yeah. Private profile.
Lover, private, pissed. I know.
Can't see anything about her. And then he just ghosts us for a week, takes a week off. A week.
He did what?
Yeah, exactly. He was up to something. I just thought the timing was suspicious, you know?
Very suspicious.
Don't be suspicious. He was very suspicious. Congrats to Vic on whatever it is that you're up to. Hey, Vic, keep this up. Maybe next year you'll have family day off because you'll have a family, you know? Because we're working family day. We're just the non-families. Maybe Vic will be the member of our team. He's tracking for a family day.
Somebody wants a family day.
Go, Vic. Okay. Go, little Vic's.
He did get to play a song in for me that I specifically chose, my custom song, Cold as Ice.
Yeah, what's that about?
That's up first on the A-list.
Now it's time for the A-list.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
Bing bong.
What's up, baby?
A-list, okay. We both followed Vic's bow at the same time. Do you think
that would have been weird, right?
Yeah, if we both did it in solidarity.
Because it would have said, like, hey, like, we really want to welcome you to our team. But if it was just one of us, it's a bit creepy.
Yeah, right. So maybe that's the plan.
We should do it after the show.
It's going to be 3, 2, 1, go.
Hello.
You know? Okay.
We would get like the Sportsnet 590 account to also follow her.
Just a branded account.
Yes, you get the branded account. And then we
This is why people make burners. So that they're not creeps. So they just burn out. They're just out there burning away. Kevin Durant style, so they can creep on Vic's girlfriend.
I'm sure he's loving this.
Yeah, he's got to be. He's sweating.
Okay, someone that wasn't loving it. Beautiful stories just come from the Olympics, you know, trials and tribulations and success and failure.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Highs and lows.
The highs and the lows.
Yeah.
And Finnish cross-country skier Remy Lindholm.
Of course.
Remy Lindholm.
Yeah.
He had a real tough day in Beijing. He suffered a frozen penis.
Yeah.
Diagnosed. I saw this. This is scientifically okay. Wow. The coffee hasn't kicked in.
Anatomically
correct.
Yeah.
He suffered a frozen penis at the men's 50-kilometer race, which was cut down to the men's 30-kilometer race because of how cold it was going to be. Freezing winds, low temperatures. They made the race 20 kilometers shorter to help the participants, yet he still suffered a legitimate frozen penis. I wish that I had two guys on the show to bounce this around. Unfortunately, you're going to have to be the one.
What, you want to bounce a frozen penis around? No, thank you.
I just wanted you guys to maybe say, ooh, I've had this happen before. Oh, man, no, doesn't it suck when this happens? But unfortunately, I don't know. So it's all you, JD.
No, the only thing that I can kind of somewhat equate it to is when you get into a cold body of water. And you know that when you're up to your thighs, you're like, oh, boy, now's the next step. Now comes the pain. And that's – it's like getting in – with the groin and getting your head underwater are the two toughest parts, right? Those are the two toughest parts. So once you're in groin, then you can dip down to shoulders and then, okay, fine. Then you're there. Then you're there. This sounds horrific. And I don't even know where to begin with this. Like, I have so many thoughts. One is just, if you're a cross-country skier, you're wearing thermal underwear, obviously. You've got some type of windbreaker, snow pants situation. You're doing this a lot. Like, is this the first time this has happened? Is this the first time?
This is because the second time it's happened to Remy Lindholm himself.
Okay, well then.
He had this happen last year at an event in Finland. The exact same thing happened. He suffered another frozen penis.
Listen, Remy, I got to tell you something, buddy. Rem, listen up close, pal.
Rem.
You got to get some kind of extra layer down there, pal. You got to put it in a sock or something because this is just not working, whatever your current system is. One frozen pee, and that's the end of that for me. Like, I'm never suffering that again. I cannot believe that you went out there with the same gear, and you didn't think, like, when they warned you, hey, Rem, it's so cold that they're going to cut the race short. You're already the frozen penis guy that you're going to go out there with the same equipment? No, you got to do something different. You're doing the same thing over and over and over. That's the definition of insanity, Remy. So figure it out. This is kind of on you. It sounds horrific. This, you know... You know that what's that movie where James Franco gets his arm stuck in a rock and then he's stuck in a rock? It's based on a true story of the guy who chops off his own arm to free himself.
42 hours or 50 something hours or he has to cut his arm off.
This is the dead last documentary now that I want to see that gets turned into a movie, you know? Like, when the James Franco movie came out, I thought, who in the...
It's called 127 Hours. I wasn't even close.
But when that movie came out, I thought, who wants to see this? Who, what person in their right mind wants to see just claustrophobia for hours on end with one actor only... having to come to the decision of making that horrible choice. Same thing for this. Who wants to hear a story about the skier who was so dumb that twice he froze his peener? I had to adjust with the words here. Like, this is all-time bad. I'm sorry. Also, are you taking tips from the other guys? Like, you're the only one who's done this twice?
Yeah, this is your career. Like, you're an Olympian at this same sport. You live in Finland. Like, you should know. It was minus 17. Yeah. That was the official temperature with obviously wind chill and such. And the race, he takes about an hour and 16 minutes. He finished 28th. So he was out there for an hour and 16 minutes.
He finished 28th?
Yeah.
He wasn't even doing good to freeze it?
No, he wasn't even
I thought he had to be first place. I figured that this guy was the only reason why he didn't veer off immediately.
It's because he's going for gold.
Yeah, 28th. I think, this guy's into this. You know, I feel like this guy, this is his fetish now. This is where I've landed on this.
Wait,
happened. He's 28th.
I just looked him up, and there's all these photos of him skiing in just underwear now. Remy Lindholm, 24, pictured training in underpants in June 2019, was forced to use a heat pack at the end of the race to thaw out his genitals.
Yes, this guy,
He might be into this kind of stuff, actually. Yeah, There's photos of him laying in the snow in underwear. So maybe he likes this is his thing.
You know what? They say there's a kink, that everybody has a kink, and that everybody's got something different. And this guy has outdone us all with his frozen penis kink, because that is clearly what is going on here. I wouldn't even put it past this guy that this is the whole reason why he's into cross-country skiing. That this is the entire purpose. First of all, who cross-country skis? Lunatics. It's for lunatics. It's the weirdest. Who is like,
especially,
you know what I want to...
50 kilometers. That's
insane.
Oh,
my God. It's, have you ever been cross-country skiing?
Yeah, for like 20 minutes across Blue Mountain, and it's awful.
So hard. It's so incredibly hard. It's no fun, zero fun whatsoever. Anybody who cross country skis, I don't care if you listen to the show, you're out of your mind. You're out of your mind. There's so many better activities you can do than cross country ski. Downhill
ski. Down the hill.
Yeah, go down the hill on the skis.
And go down.
Yeah,
let gravity help you.
Yes.
You just glide down the slope.
Just have a good time gliding down. Even if you go down just a bunny hill, that's way better. Cross-country skiing is already the worst. This guy found his muse for freezing his penis. So congratulations, Remy, you perv.
Let's see if we can get him on the show.
Sorry, I don't kink shame.
Producer Danielle,
you're not a perv.
We can interview him for an Olympic-themed A-list, and then we'll ask him about his life and his Valentine's-esque things. Oh, yeah, my fins.
Yeah, that's what I mean.
I forgot about that.
You're like, bronze medals into frozen penises. That's what we do.
Reindeer soup. Okay.
All right.
That's
next?
Enough of that one. Speaking of balls.
Yeah, probably too long.
Speaking of balls, tennis balls. I got to talk about my favorite tradition from Dartmouth, which was resurfaced this past
moment.
Weekend. Hey, I'm in charge of the A-list.
Yeah, I know.
So I saw on Twitter the infamous Dartmouth Princeton men's hockey game, and there's a tradition that's been going on since like the 1990s, early in the 90s, I think it was like 1993 or something, where tennis balls are thrown on the ice during the game for a specific reason. And anyway, I retweeted the tweet, and I had a couple people message me like, what is this? Especially producer Danielle and you guys that weren't interested in weren't loving the tradition. So let me take you down memory lane about this fan tradition in the NCAA at my old alma mater. So back in the day, there was a game between Princeton and Dartmouth men's hockey. And after Princeton scored a goal, somebody in the stands, one soul, threw a tennis ball at the Dartmouth goaltender. And a tradition was born right from there. Now, every single time that Princeton plays Dartmouth at home, so in the Thompson Arena in Hanover, New Hampshire, every single student brings a dozen tennis balls. How many you can fit, all the balls that you can get, you bring them. You stuff them in your pants, you stuff them in your backpack, your sleeves, whatever. And as soon as the first goal is scored against Princeton, the entire arena throws hundreds, thousands of tennis balls down on the ice. And it takes like 25 minutes for the arena staff to clean them up. And everyone just sits there and the balls just bounce around the ice. Anyway. So that is the tradition. And if you go back and see it this past weekend, Dartmouth scored with like 2 minutes left in the third to finally crack the tradition. So anyway, for me, an amazing thing, if you're a Princeton fan, not so much about Ross Tucker, is just waking up just real pissed off about this one because he's a Princeton guy. But for me, I love it.
Yeah. So I think it's awesome. The visual of it is very, very cool. The only thing I thought is... how many of the people that throw them on the ice, and how many people like actually try to use this as an opportunity to throw it at Princeton players?
Both.
Like, yeah, that's what I mean.
I've been there, and you're like, I'm not trying to get in the net. I'm trying to hit the number 14.
That's what I mean. Is so it's like all of a sudden all the Princeton players become, because there's the only socially acceptable time where you're allowed to hit somebody with a ball, other than actually playing dodgeball, is when you're at the golf of the driving range and you try to hit the golf cart, right? You go, oh, I just want to hit the cart. Yeah, and actually, I even remember when I was a kid, we had one place where it was just a guy doing it. It didn't even have the cart.
No.
He was just out. Yes.
Was he in gear?
Yes, of course he had some gears. It was far away, but he would go and collect. But anyways, it wasn't a busy driving range by any means. Remember, I'm from Whitehorse, Yukon. But either way... That's what I picture, is everyone trying to hit the cart where you're going, oh, we have these tennis balls. We're going to fire them down at all these poor Princeton kids, these poor little spoiled Princeton kids
exactly.
who are about to get pelted with tennis balls over and over and over again. Also, what's to stop someone from painting a rock green and throwing that? Just
ooh,
being like,
be, we have souls and we have, you know,
you?
Morals. But the,
you?
one of the games that I think it was my last year, my senior year, they Dartmouth went up 1-0. It was early. Everyone threw the balls on the ice. So obviously the refs, everyone knows this is going to happen. They clear it off. Dartmouth goes up 2-0. There's hundreds more tennis balls. And they just kept doing it. And then Dartmouth started getting delay of game penalties because now it's like this isn't – you can't do this after a 3-0 goal. So they started getting penalties and – I remember the captain of the men's team went on the speaker during the game. He went over to the box. He said, guys, please stop throwing tennis balls on the ice. We're getting penalties. And then everyone's just like in the stands, like drunk, and they're continuing to throw tennis balls. They were getting kicked out. It went downhill at that point because like the team was literally like, please stop throwing tennis balls. Like, we're getting penalties. Like, this is a real sports game that we're playing.
Yeah.
So it can get onto the bad side of fans, but a really fun tradition. Go take some looks at some of the videos on YouTube. It's a fun one.
That looks fun. I will say that whenever I think about these games, I just think it's, oh, Dartmouth and Princeton. All I think is all the people you went to school with. Yeah, all the people you went to school with were named like Kenneth and Reginald, you know?
Yeah.
And that you,
Charles.
Yeah, all these Kenneth, Reginalds, and Charleses. Whoa, let's not drag the name Charles, all right?
Charles.
Oh, yeah, too late. Too late by you. But yeah, all those guys just, yeah, taking the tradition too far. Let's go to the hockey game so we can throw tennis balls, Kenneth. And he's like, yes, of course.
In their frat sweaters.
Yes.
Yes. There's a lot of cool traditions in NCAA, but obviously I'm biased about that one, unless I was on the other side of the tennis balls. So, talked about balls. Let's move on. We hit all the body parts today.
Yeah.
This is a good story. The ratings and the views came out for the gold medal game between our girls and those.
Yeah, what was it?
Americans, 354 million viewers. This is just NBC, which averaged more viewers than any NHL game this season. Which means that it was the second most watched hockey game in the United States since 2019. I'm going to try to pull up the Canadian one. I had it, but I closed that tab, unfortunately. But obviously huge, more than any NHL game. And it was an 11 p.m. start time. So keep that in mind. Second most viewed in the States in the last 3 years since 2019. So that's more than that.
So I've been thinking about this. That's a crazy number. That's just a crazy good number for a game, especially that starts then. When, you know, we joke a lot about how sports media people will make up stories. Not just sports media people, people in general on Twitter, whatever. They'll make up stories, right? And then, I was in a cafe, and there was a young little girl, and she said, Papa, please, I need to watch women's hockey, and I need
is
to
this
have...
Reginald?
But you know how the people do those things, right? The fake stories that they make up. This was a real one where a lot of people had experiences of daughters or family members or people who were incredibly inspired by this team that happened to be playing at 11:30 at night in the middle of the week, right? Canada, USA hockey, there is nothing like it. I think the problem is, how do you replicate this for women's hockey? Because you can't put that into any other... You can't replicate it. Like, okay, so what are you supposed to do? You're going to have a series between the two teams where you go back and forth between Canada and the United States? Okay, that's good. People will go to it. But it also kind of takes away from the allure of the Olympics if you end up playing the United States 20 times and constantly selling the games, right? Part of what's so special about the Olympics and the World Championships is these are the two times that it really matters, right? You get the World Championships once a year, but the Olympics is the creme de la creme where you get bragging rights for four long years. Then you go to women's pro hockey, which you've been a member of, which is a good product, but the best women on the planet are all on those two teams. And you look at, you know, what the cut line is, the drop, like, Ailish, I've been to, I saw the league that you played in. I went to it multiple times. I watch Natalie Spooner versus a lot of the other girls in the league, and it's a very big difference.
You know, I think you were probably watching her versus me in the corner.
Yeah,
you didn't
probably
know me yet.
Was. I didn't know you yet.
You're like, but who's that duster? Oh, yeah, she's your new co-host, actually.
Yeah, she's your new co-host. You're getting absolutely destroyed. It's how do we turn this into a sustainable, good product for people? Because it's really hard to say, hey, let's go from watching the U.S. women's like team versus Canada's women's team and then put it into the next product down. Like, it's, I don't know what the next step is here. I'm going to be very curious to talk to you about this throughout the coming week. I know we're going to get one of the Olympians on because this is always the conversation, right? Is off of soccer, how do we keep more professional soccer leagues going? How do we build up women's sport? How do we do it with basketball? But it doesn't feel like there's the same depth of field with hockey, right? Like, you're not drawing from as many countries as you are with soccer. And so I don't look at it as the same easy solution. But there's got to be something, right? Because clearly there's a demand for this product when it's at its very best. Just what does a design look like for women's hockey to be at its best? How many teams is it? How many players is it? I'm very curious to try to figure out, you know, what is the future of the sport? Because I think the big mistake would be trying to go back to the past and creating just another version of the league that already fell apart.
Yeah, and I think that, like, the biggest conversation in my circles right now with the women's hockey is that there's so many eyes on it right now. You just saw that. That was, like, the most viewed game this year. Obviously, you're not going to be able to replicate a gold medal Olympic game in, you know, next September. But those same players are basically playing each other all the time. And they are still training, and they're still wanting to be at that level in 4 years. Like, there were some conversations about, what's Poulin going to do now? And it was American Elliott that kind of hinted at, you know, she's got some opportunities, like an ECHL team.
I thought you said American Elliott, and I was like, who's American Elliott?
Frank and Merrick, Elliott.
I was like, there's just an American Elliott out there who's doing his whole thing.
They kind of on the weekend floated around the idea that she had had some offers from an ECHL team. Also, like, the Montreal Canadiens can't wait for her to retire. But the main conversation is she wants to do maybe another Olympic cycle. And it's like, great. But do we have to wait 4 more years to see Poulin at her best? No, it's these same players will be playing. They're going to be training. They're going to be looking for somewhere to play. And if 300 and whatever million people wanted to tune in then, you have to find a way that, you know, a fraction of those people want to tune in weekly or monthly, right? So I think that's the biggest conversation. It'll be interesting to see what shakes out over the next couple months. I think there's a lot of things in the works, to be honest. It's just going to take some funding and some belief in the game, and not just like, hey, you know, you're not going to make $1 billion off this product in year one, you know?
Yeah.
So big things to come. Really great news that many people tuned in. Incredible.
Awesome news.
Really, really awesome. And I'm going to get to see them tonight when they come home from Beijing, of the girls. So stay tuned. I'll have lots of stories about that tomorrow.
I'll have a little
bit of a party for them.
I'm not surprised that it did that number, just simply because it really is. Like, and I guess I'm a little biased because I'm Canadian as well, so it's probably different in other parts of the world, but when I think of the greatest rivalries that I've seen in my life in all of sports, men's and women's, Canada hockey versus USA hockey in women's is, like, very, very, very high on the list. I don't even know what, like, it's that perfect blend of top-end talent, big stage, huge stakes, hate,
oh yeah,
intensity. Like, it's just, it's so good.